south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander...
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. Now, continuing on the topic of last week's show, just yesterday I was in a big farmer's market in the DR, in the Dominican Republic, where I'm broadcasting from right now. And I decided to buy some coconuts for the coconut water. You all know about the benefits of coconut water now, don't you? And I'm not talking about that pasteurized processed stuff out of the bottle that you get in the grocery store either. I'm talking about right out of the coconut, fresh. Now, as you might know, down here south of the border, they'll take the coconut and slice it with a machete right in front of you, and you can stick a straw in it then and suck out the water. However, my advice is never to let the local guy slice the coconut all the way through the meat and have him or her hand you a straw or stick it in themselves. If you do that, you're asking for intestinal trouble. Just let them cut a small amount of the bottom of the coconut off so it's a flat surface, then you can set it down like a cup, and have them cut the top just so you can barely see the white of the meat. Then, if you're thirsty, you can easily punch a hole through that white meat with your tiny little Swiss Army knife, which I recommend you carry on your keychain. Then you stick your own straw in there. Never let the guy or gal who's slicing your coconut touch the straw or stick it in. Unless you feel like spending a night with the porcelain goddess, if you know what I mean. Oh, and by the way, about those small Swiss Army knives, the very tiny ones that you can stick on your keychain. You know, they won't let you through the airport with that. But just slip it into a pocket in your stowaway luggage and you'll be all right and you can collect it later. However, down here in Latin America, going through these often kind of strange third world airports, if you don't secure your stowaway luggage nicely, sometimes things will go missing. And forget about those stupid little locks that you put on the zippers. They can get in, and you won't even know it. And I'm not talking about big things, but small things like perfumes and makeup and jewelry and small Swiss Army knives like that. It's happened to me. So how can you secure that stowaway stuff? Well, I'll tell you what it's like down here. I don't know if you can even get away with this up north. But when you walk into an airport down here in Latin America, before you even go up to the ticket counter and check your luggage in, you'll walk past a porter who's got a wrapping machine, and they'll wrap your suitcases in plastic wrap for about $5 to $10 a wrap. Then you go up to the ticket counter and hand that bag over, and they'll slip a little tag on it as usual and take it as a stowed piece. So, should you do that? Should you have it wrapped? I highly recommend it. However, there is an easier and cheaper way. Just bring a roll of packing tape with you. You know, the clear plastic stuff? You can buy a roll in any grocery store for about $1, $1.50. You just wrap each piece with about 5 or 10 revolutions, and after seeing that, none of the luggage handlers will bother to mess with it. Just too much work for them. There are much easier and better pickings from those odd pieces of designer luggage down the line. So, don't be an idiot and buy that stuff. That's no way to be low profile. You're asking for trouble. Now, the funny thing is you do that luggage wrapping thing before it's ever x-rayed or goes through any kind of metal detector or anything, and I find that kind of weird. I know in the first world they pick everything apart like it was a crime scene investigation. I know, I've heard the stories, though I haven't been there myself, and I don't plan on it either. So, to repeat, you walk into the airport. You have your luggage wrapped for $5 or $10, or you wrap it yourself with packing tape, which I recommend, and you hand it over, as usual, up at the ticket window. And don't forget to have a spare roll of packing tape in that stowed luggage, too, for the return trip. Because, you know, you can't carry on packing tape, because, you know, it's a lethal weapon, right? It's one of those prohibited items. Just in case, I guess, you want to do some damage in the plane with it. Like maybe tape all the vomit bags shut. Now, wouldn't that bring the airlines to a halt? So anyway, after you've wrapped your luggage and handed it in at the ticket counter, you won't see it again till you pick it up on the roundabout at your final destination. So it seems like you can put anything you want into a suitcase like that, at least down here in Latin America. Because, you know, I travel a great deal. And on the way out of an airport, checking through customs in whatever Latin country I've landed in, luckily, on the way out, I've never been asked to open up one of my pieces of luggage that's been wrapped that way. Somehow, the customs people seem to just give it a pass if it's wrapped. Maybe, again, it's just too much trouble and they don't want you to go cutting it open and tearing it apart. But who knows? Now, of course, most of the time it goes through an x-ray scanner, but sometimes they just let you walk right through. You gotta love it. Only in Latin America, huh? Okay, back to the story. Anyway, I went to one of the local markets in Punta Cana in the DR, and I bought a couple coconuts and had the guy cut them up like that, like I mentioned earlier. They were going to be for later, and of course, I brought my own straws. And by the way, coconuts cut like that could last up to a week, because the machete hasn't penetrated past the meat. They're still hermetically sealed. Anyway, I bought these nice big coconuts for around $1 each. And by the way, back at my all-inclusive hotel resort, they were selling them for $5 a piece. How do you like that? And by the way, at that very upscale resort, there were tons and tons of well-manicured coconut trees everywhere, as you might imagine, and a crew actually going around picking them up and bringing them to a stand with a wheelbarrow where you could buy them nicely cut and prepared for, like I said, $5 each. Such a deal, huh? Fact is, if I had a machete, I could have picked them up off the ground. They were all over the place. And I could have downed coconut water till a week from next Thursday. For free, too. However, I am a klutzy gringo and do want to keep all my appendages intact. Believe me, that's one thing you don't want to play with, a machete. I know it looks easy, but so does a backflip. And you don't want to try that at home either. And believe me, every poor Latin kid has his machete teething scars to prove it. And some of them ain't pretty, believe me. Anyway, I bought a couple of coconuts for $1 a piece at the regular market that the normal people go to in the nearest small town, which is about 10 kilometers away. And I gotta tell you, a few unusual things happened along the way. Don't they always? Anyway, like I said in a past show, the Dominican Republic, with all its beautiful white beaches, is just filled with high-end, all-inclusive resorts. I mean, you never have to really leave these places at all. In fact, the one I'm at, which I highly recommend, and it's very cheap for what you get, is a fantastic deal, really. And the fact is, I've been to a dozen or more all-inclusive resorts all through the world, and this one in the DR is the best one by far, for a lot of reasons, not just the price. I'll go into that at a later show, I promise. Of course, one of the reasons I got it so cheap is because I booked it direct online in Spanish, so I know I got a huge discount over gringo prices that you might be paying if you booked it from up in the States in English. Anyway, like I said, in this giant, upscale, first world, four-star, all-inclusive resort, it's like a small, deluxe city that you really never have to leave. It's so big and covers so many acres, of course it has an 18-hole golf course too, that it's got its own shopping center. And I mean a fully equipped shopping center with 30 or 40 stores, many being high-end, first-world brand-name stores that we're all familiar with. And why not, since the crowd staying there are obviously not penny pinchers. You can tell by the way they dress, how skinny they are, the jewelry they have, and the luggage they're hauling around with them. Now, everything you buy at these stores is very expensive, even though some of them have signs that say duty-free, but that's just a come-on. I'm sure you frequent international travelers know all about that so-called duty-free BS scam. You know, you can always get what those duty-free stores sell out on the street in a little tienda much cheaper. But you knew that, right? So anyway, I repeat, in the DR, they have these big, luxury, all-inclusive resorts that have large shopping complexes within them. My advice? Don't buy anything there. They're way too expensive. For example, they've got a cafe internet there, too, and you'll pay, get this, 10 U.S. bucks an hour to use the internet. Whereas, in the nearest town, like 10 kilometers away, you can book an hour in a hole-in-the-wall cafe internet for a dollar. So it's 10 times that in the all-inclusive resort. So then you might ask, what's all-inclusive about that resort? Well, it is all-inclusive, unless you want something special like an aromatherapy massage, or if ladies want their nails or hair done at one of the beauty salons, that kind of thing. And, oh, by the way, this is such an all-inclusive resort that even the mini bar in your room is free. And they stock everything. Even some of the top-shelf liquors like Chivas Regal are included, etc., etc. But I digress, as usual. Anyway, me, being a curious guy, I wanted to find out what life was like outside those all-inclusive resorts, of course. And I certainly wasn't going to pay the price at one of those rip-off shopping centers in the all-inclusive. So I went to the reception area and asked the lady if there was a shuttle to the nearest town. Like I said, it was about 10 kilometers away. And she said, oh no, We don't have a shuttle, and we don't really recommend that our guests take off on their own and explore or go to the nearby towns because it could be dangerous. And then came the old, well, you know, we can't be responsible what happens to our guests once they leave the all-inclusive resort area. And just the way that it's stated is kind of scary to anyone who doesn't speak Spanish, that's for sure. And that's when my red flags go up. I've heard that spiel 1,000 times before, in almost every Latin country. Fact is, you know, they don't want you to be mingling with the locals and finding out what the prices really are. So naturally, I didn't take her advice, and I grabbed a cab and made it to that little town about 10 clicks away. And the trip, with two of us in the car, $10. And of course, I asked the driver to take us where the locals shop. And that's where I picked up those coconuts. And here's the thing. Now, of course, I look like a gringo. But I've been in Latin America so long that when I speak, I guess, at least I've been told this, that my accent kind of confuses the locals. They don't exactly know how I picked up on all the Spanish slang words, which is kind of difficult unless you're down here a long, long time. So in some ways, my Spanish is not that great, but I do have a handle on the regional slang. So I can generally tell what countries many Latin people come from. Like you could tell, for example, someone from New Jersey or Texas or California. The thing is that most gringos who do learn their Spanish learn proper Spanish, and it's easy for the local Spanish-speaking population to know that you came from Cleveland or wherever, and learned your Spanish step by step by taking courses. Whereas a lot of us long-term expats, we picked it up by hook and crook on the streets, as well as a bit from the books. And the locals can tell we're a little bit more tuned in than the average Spanish-speaking gringo who may have taken some high school and college courses and maybe Rosetta Stone or other internet courses. There are so many of them out there these days, it's hard to keep track. The fact is, you don't get to pick up on the local jargon and the slang words unless you're actually living down here quite a while. At least, that's what I found out. And not hanging around with gringos, by the way. That said, nearly everywhere I go, once I start speaking to the locals in Spanish, soon enough, I hear someone say, ¿De dónde eres? Which means, where are you from? Because they're kind of confused. They know I'm a gringo, but I don't sound like one. They think maybe my gringo parents lived in a Latin country and I was born there. And I always say, adivina, which means, take a guess. And by the way, you should really learn that word, adivina, which looks, when you write it down, like the word divine with the prefix A in front of it, adivina. And it makes sense that it means guess. Just think of using one of those old-fashioned divining rods to find water or whatever, and it'll stick in your head. And remember, if you ever want to get a lively conversation going with a Spanish person at a party or whatever, just throw that word adivina around and you'll get a lot of smiles and a lot of talk. It's one of the best icebreakers there is in Spanish. So remember it. It's adivina. So anyway, when a Spanish-speaking person says to me, ¿De dónde eres? Asking me where I'm from. Lately, they almost never guess that I'm from the States, believe it or not. So does that mean I've lost my gringo advantage? Nope, because I still look like a gringo. So anyway, getting back to the guy who sold me the coconuts. Have to mention that he had a I Love New York t-shirt on. You know, those things are ubiquitous down here in Latin America. Everybody has a I Love New York something. A hat, t-shirt, bracelet, necklace. I've even seen a few tattoos like that. Yep, real impressive. And if that doesn't tell you, Latins absolutely love the U.S. I don't know what does. So anyway, this coconut dealer had an I Love New York t-shirt. And speaking of t-shirts, I saw another Latin down here with a t-shirt that said, He who dies with the most tattoos wins. Now, he didn't know what that meant. He just knew that it was in English, so in Latin America that means it's cool. But I couldn't help staring at it, thinking about the thought behind it and what it implied. All the while I was thinking, what kind of signal is that sending out, really? Because look, I come from a generation whose parents in my day told me that the number of tattoos a guy has is inversely proportional to his desirability in the job market. At least the corporate white-collar job market. In other words, if you want to be a success in life and you have a lot of tattoos, you better plan on being your own boss because you're not likely to ascend the corporate ladder with a born-to-be-wild tattoo on your neck. Unless, of course, you work for Harley. Anyway, after a few seconds, this middle-aged guy selling coconuts to me started speaking in English. Very broken English, by the way. And he said, Where are you from, man? To which I said in Spanish, Adivina. And he looked at me and he said, Argentina? Chile, maybe? And I said, no, what makes you think that? He said, well, you're so white, man, and you're canche, which means you have light-colored hair in Spanish. And I said, nope, guess again. And by then, two more Latins came up to the coconut stand, and I guess they were impatient, because one of them said, puchica, apurate, which loosely translates to, oh man, hurry up. Now, when the coconut guy heard that, he stopped talking to me, and he turned to the guy, and he said, you're from Guatemala, right? And the guy said, how'd you know? And he said, you said puchica. Only Guatemalans say puchica. Again, he was referring to some Guatemalan local slang. Now, puchica, which is used a lot in Guatemala and Salvador, is a kind of an exclamation filler word. Not a bad word, just a stupid filler word like dude or awesome. But what happened next kind of startled me. The coconut guy threw up his hands in the air, smiled, and said, before I die, I just have to visit Guatemala. That's the promised land. But you know that because you're from Guatemala. Now, the Guatemalan guy was very happy to hear that, of course. You know, pride in your country and all that. That is, until the coconut guy said he had to make that pilgrimage because he wanted to get the personal blessing of a man named Cash Luna. And he said it again. Cash Luna. This time with stars in his eyes. No kidding. Then he even got more excited and said to the Guatemalan guy, did you ever see him? Did you ever meet him in person? And the Guatemalan guy said, yeah, in fact, we only live about a mile away from his mansion. In fact, we always know when his helicopter comes over, we better stay at home all day or take off out of town, because when the Cash Luna Circus starts, there's bound to be a 2 or 3 hour traffic jam. The guy rolled his eyes and did not say it in a nice way either. But you see, the coconut guy didn't seem to pick up on any of that Guatemalan's negativity about this guy, Cash Luna. He was just so excited to meet someone that actually had some kind of personal contact with him that he was just beaming. Now, to explain this a bit, this Cash Luna guy is a superstar in Latin America. A superstar con man, that is. And of course, being that he is Latin American, he didn't invent his little, or I should say very big, con game. He just copied first world people, as usual. So this guy, Cash Luna, just took advantage of the lag time phenomena in the evangelical Christian arena. And if it wasn't him, it'd have been someone else. Remember that lag time thing? There's a huge lag time, generally, for anything that becomes a big success, or fad, or big moneymaker up in the first world. So it always takes some years, at least, for anything that's popular up in the first world to get down here to Latin America. That's why when it's done down here, no one has to reinvent the wheel. They just copy, paste, and translate as needed. So, as far as this Cash Luna fraud, he's an exact copy of the Jimmy Baker and Jerry Farwell School of Evangelical Con Artists. I mean, it had to happen down here too, right? Now, get this. This guy Cash Luna's claim to fame is that he's met Jesus personally 3 times. And of course, that's why he needs 3 bulletproof limousines, a $10 million main house, 3 or 4 vacation homes, a Learjet and a helicopter, a Rolex collection, and a team of Israeli bodyguards. Yep, just as humble and meek as the Lord intended. Now remember, this is a guy that I told you in a past show, recently completed a $30 million church that seats 30,000 people a week. Or is it 50,000? I can't remember. But I do remember that God let 3 concrete workers fall to their deaths while they were building the thing. I guess even the man upstairs has to break a few eggs to make an omelet, right? And right next to that church, good old Cash Luna has got a huge state-of-the-art TV studio and Latin America's largest chain of religious television stations, broadcasting 24/7. In fact, if you turn on the TV anywhere in Latin America, you'll find not one, but at least 3 or 4 24/7 evangelical stations with their well-dressed preachers and prophets whimpering and wailing and shedding crocodile tears, curing acne and other fatal conditions right on the tube. But nothing is for nothing, so you don't get miracles like that if you don't pony up. It's all about that monthly tithe now, isn't it? Just like it says in the good book, or does it? I can't remember. And it's 10%, I believe, even if you're making $100 or $200 a month. So it's because of those international TV programs in Spanish that our humble coconut vendor and the other evangelical Christians on the island inevitably got hooked on this guy. And the craziest thing, of course, is the guy's name is Cash, C-A-S-H. And yet somehow, Latins, with all their love of everything gringo, haven't figured out what that word cash means yet. And if they did, would it mean game over for the guy? I kind of doubt it, because after all, he has had 3 sit-downs with Jesus. Probably I'm thinking at Starbucks. Anyway, you get the picture. And you know, it's so much easier for us first world gringos and expats down here in Latin America to be terribly cynical about all this, because down here, poor is not like poor up in the States. Down here, half the population lives on under $2 a day. So, scamming them is really more than a crime. Knowing that, it's not easy to have sympathy for uneducated dummies up in the first world who've been scammed by evangelical con artists like that. Because you see, dummies in the States who fall for it still have food on the table every day, hot and cold running water, and a big screen TV. So anyway, here I am, standing in a low-end market in the Dominican Republic, watching an upscale Guatemalan on vacation demolishing this little coconut seller's fantasy. Or so I thought. And as this upscale Guatemalan guy proceeded to rip old Cash a new anal orifice, the poor coconut seller's face only dimmed for a second. Turns out this guy's one dream in life was for he and his family to make a pilgrimage to Guatemala to see the world's largest evangelical church and hear the words of the prophet live and in person. And it was obvious to me and the Guatemalan guy, who finally gave up on the subject, that this guy, making $100 to $200 a month at most, rather preferred to believe the fantasy that a guy named Cash, with 3 personal sit-downs with Jesus to his credit, has the inside track on the afterlife. He'd rather believe that for sure than accept eyewitness testimony from a very educated guy living right down the street who has first-hand knowledge of the cons and scams. Oh, and by the way, one more thing about that coconut seller. Now, like I said, he did speak some broken English, and when you're in the DR, off the beach resort tourist trail, you'll find almost no one speaks English. So I asked him, "Where'd you learn your English?" And he said, "Los Angeles." He'd lived there, get this, for 20 years. Remember, now this is the guy with the tattered I Love New York t-shirt. Then I asked him the loaded question I often ask Latins who are working menial, unskilled jobs, yet they respond to me in broken English. Because you can just bet every time that they're deported illegal aliens. And that question I always ask is, "Well, how come you're not still up there then?" And, you know, more than half the time they'll avoid the question by saying, "Well, I'm only here temporarily. I'm going back." Meaning they're going to sneak back in again. But in this case, the guy said, "Well, you know, I guess you could say I was a bad boy." And then he laughed about it and got real honest and said, "In fact, I was a bad boy 4 different times." So, according to him, he got deported 4 different times and shipped by air back down to the Dominican Republic, on your dime, of course. And you might wonder, how does a poor guy from Dominican Republic even make it up to the States? I mean, the DR is on an island, right? So that means that almost all the Dominicans living up in the States now had to get there by air. They had to get a plane ticket. And get this. Down here, the Dominican papers say there are at least 3 million Dominicans living up in the States, even though certain sources in the U.S. say it's only 1.5 million. Believe me, the locals here know otherwise. Anyway, nearly all of those 3 million in the States would have had to have gone by plane, right? Well, what I found out from this very talkative coconut guy and some of his friends hanging around the stand, turns out, back in the day, before 9/11 that is, there were 2 easy ways to get in the States. One, through Puerto Rico, and the other, by paying a little bribe to the immigration guy in the DR that stamped your entry visa on your passport. And here's how that scam went. Before 9/11, U.S. immigration allowed 200,000 Dominicans into the country on business visas and 200,000 on other visas. So that's 400,000 visas a year. And from what I've heard from old-timers down here in the DR, if you could prove you had any kind of relative at all up in the States, you could generally get a tourist visa. But that was then. Now, turns out those tourist visas were for 10 years, but you couldn't be in the U.S. for more than 6 months at a time. Now, back then the system was very lax, and many people overstayed their visa, sometimes years at a time, and nothing happened to them. as long as they weren't on the books as committing a crime in the States. So when they did go back to the DR for a visit, it was really no problem getting back in the States either, even though their visa stipulated they could only stay in the States 6 months or less at a time. They knew they could manipulate the dates on their passports once they got back to the DR. It was easy to get an immigration official at the Dominican airport with a $100 bribe to stamp or backdate an entry visa, so the next time you flew back to the States, it looked like you fell within the 6 month range. And of course, like this coconut guy and others have said, that doesn't work anymore. So the vast majority of Dominicans that are up in the States now, and who of course are illegal, came in before 9/11. Because since then, those scams don't work anymore. Now, as far as the Puerto Rico route, it's mostly unknown to almost everyone except Dominicans and Puerto Ricans. The DR is only 100 miles from Puerto Rico, and there's ferries and boats, illegal and registered, going back and forth all the time. In fact, you could leave the DR at night, and in the morning, you'll be in Puerto Rico. Now get this, according to some sources, there are anywhere from a third to a half a million illegal Dominicans in Puerto Rico right now. And you know, since Puerto Rico is a U.S. territory, Puerto Ricans do not need a visa to get into the U.S. All they need is their passport and a plane ticket, and they get right in. And from what I've heard from old-timers here in the DR, there was, back then anyway, pretty popular and cheap illegal trade in Puerto Rican passports and documents, legal ones that were supposedly stolen or missing that ended up in the hands of Dominicans, who later used them to fly into the U.S. perfectly legally without a visa. In other words, before 9/11 and fingerprinting and facial recognition and stuff, and of course, passport magnetic strip swiping, you could buy real Puerto Rican documents, supposedly lost, missing, or stolen, and by making yourself up to look a bit like the photo, there wasn't much of a risk to get in. Things were very loose and sloppy back then, and many Puerto Ricans just freely sold their documents and reported them lost or missing and got new ones. So needless to say, most all those Dominicans up in the States now got in before 9/11. As far as Dominicans who want to slip into the U.S. illegally now, they don't have it easy like Mexicans and Central Americans who have a wide open border to slip in. These days, Dominicans actually have to get a visa and then have the money to get an airline ticket to the States.
South of the border, down Mexico way.
You've been listening to the Expat Files, living in Latin America, coming to you twice a week from somewhere south of the border. Email me, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And don't forget to check out expatwisdom.com to sign up for your free reports on Latin America. See you next time. Nos vemos. She was a picture.